You can have all the Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio podcast with our new app. Just search your app store, Apple, Android, Kindle. We don't care what you use. Search the app store for Explorations Early Learning. Download the app. Give it a try.
It's time to lean back and buckle in. This ain't your grandma's early learning podcast. Then again, your grandma probably didn't know what a podcast was. Hey, moms and dads, puppies and kittens, caregivers and advocates, it's time for Shaken Bones. Here's
Hi
Dan
there.
And Amy.
Welcome to the Shaken Bones podcast. I'm Dan Hodgins.
And I'm Amy Ahola.
In this episode, we're going to talk about Be Really Good because Sam is watching. Amy and I are hanging out together to tackle the untouchable. Sometimes you might challenge your beliefs, maybe even threat your comfort zone. And most importantly, we want to make you think. We don't expect agreement or disagreement, but what we do hope is to cause some shaking bones. You know, Amy, that threat about, you know, you better behave or Santa won't bring you anything. As good as my mother was, I remember as a child her saying that to me, as soon as Halloween got over, it seemed, to start with the threat of if you don't keep your room clean or if you don't let your brother do this, Santa's watching. And I think it worked for maybe a half a day of that, and then I'd go right back to doing what she didn't want me to do. Did you have that in your childhood too, or...?
You know, Dan, I don't remember a whole lot in terms of, you know, the whole Santa threats in my childhood at all. But I've definitely seen it with some of the children in my program. And, you know, before I ran my own home-based program, I was real guilty of some of this because for the center that I worked in did a whole lot of stuff for Christmas. And they brought in Santa Claus and I had an elf suit, so I was Santa's elf. And the children there could not believe that I was Santa's elf. And, you know, I worked for Santa year-round, so it was my job to report to him. So even in my early childhood career, I did a lot of this stuff that I look back on and I just, like, hang my head. Because it would, you know, it's just really not productive. And it's just something that, you know, with the... some of the cultural, you know, I hate to say norms with that, but the way that people bring across Santa Claus sometimes just is not really authentic or really good for young children.
Right, and I think the threat, or bringing in the threat, was done many times and still is in some cases to improve children's behavior. And often it backfires. It doesn't really get the behavior that they want. In some cases, it might even cause fear rather than change of behavior. Don't you think so?
Definitely. And, you know, this whole, you know, everyone has a right to decide how that they're going to celebrate if they choose to celebrate Santa. And the whole aspect of it is just something that I really, you know, I really struggle with because it's, you know, the spirit of Santa is there, but then having this fictitious guy who comes into your house, you know, it's just kind of a scary concept for young children too. And, you know, a lot of young children are very afraid of Santa dressed up and parents will bring their children to see Santa and, you know, sometimes force them to sit on Santa's lap. And so just the whole aspect of it, I really struggle with sometimes in terms of what's really appropriate for young children with this and some of the rituals that we place around Santa Claus.
Right. I've even avoided going to shopping malls and that because of the, and I think I mentioned this at another podcast too, that the lines of children crying and their parents or adults with the child you know, wanting to get a picture taken on Santa's lap and so they can send it to grandma and that kind of thing. And the poor child who, and, you know, would normally, even if you celebrated that experience and the child is crying, it's not really a celebration. it's more of a fearful chore that I have to do for an adult who really doesn't understand my feelings. So often I want to say to the adult, you stand, sit in Santa's lap, and I'll take your picture, and that will make the child feel really good, and you'll get the task done in terms of that component. But there is that image of that things need to happen in a certain way. And again, I'm a strong believer that it's up to the family and what they think is important. But I still think we need to really consider what's relevant and crucial for the child's developmental age also in terms of that experience.
Exactly. And, you know, the whole, I go back and forth with so much of this because, you know, we don't as a program celebrate holidays in our program unless the children bring it up. And for many years now, we have not done a whole lot for Christmas. But a lot of times, you know, the children will pretend to be Santa. And so this whole idea of, you know, Santa's watching you and all of that type of thing, you know, there are children who like to be reporters in every program. But, you know, that there's just that one child who has to tell you everything that every other child is doing. And
right.
I had one little girl over the past couple of years who was extremely adamant that, you know, Santa was watching, or these, you know, elf on the shelves that have become really popular that are out watching the children too around the holidays. You know, she would come in and she would report, and she would make naughty and nice lists every day. And she would report to me who was going to be on which list and why, because she was paying attention, you know, being super sensitive to children's behavior and letting them know whether or not they were going to be getting anything for Christmas this year, because according to what she was judging, you know, you were on the naughty or the nice list. And then it got to be really difficult and really challenging for me at times, because when she would do something, then she got extremely upset about the fact that Santa was watching her, and she was super concerned that, you know, because she had done something that she felt bad about afterwards, that she wasn't going to be getting anything for Christmas. And so, you know, it's a really hard and difficult thing because children take things so literally sometimes, and, you know, they're taking everything in and they're believing everything. But it's just it's a really hard place to put children in with that fear and the stress and, you know, all of the added aspects of that, which I'm sure is never intentional, but can be one of the side effects of that.
Sure. I'm thinking about, I'd probably be on the naughty list. I just think, that's the list. Matter of fact, it's probably the list I want to be on. It's the list in terms of that. But yeah, this is amazing to me, but I can see it happening. You know, that children sometimes act out what gives them power, and that certainly would be an example of being able to place you or me or another child on a particular list because of behavior that they decided was good or bad. And then the other component, too, is the child begins to think about themselves. Am I really that bad? But it must be because somebody said that I was naughty and I'm on the naughty list or the good list, and that's in some cases. So I think part of I really believe in most cases there's good intentions for that kind of teachings, but it necessarily doesn't fit what's appropriate for young children in terms of the component. You know, the same thing occurred. I remember being, my mother was extremely religious. And she would say to me, and she was a very good mother, but she used it in a way that she thought was moving towards better behavior. And she would say things like, God is watching you, and remember, if you do something bad, you could be punished for that behavior. And I remember once stepping on a nail after my brother and I got into a fight, and I ran away from him and stepped on a nail. And I remember her saying to me, not in a mean way, but remember her saying, remember, God is watching you, and you just stepped on that nail because he doesn't want you do that kind of thing. And I, for a while there, I thought, wow, this he is watching me, and I better really be careful what I do, and fearful then became part of my experience, not really the joy or celebration, but more of the fear of that component. So it's not just the Santa Claus sometimes, it's using a variety of things to try to change children's behavior.
Right. And I, you know, and the struggle with all of that is whether it's God or it's Santa or, you know, something else, it's something extrinsic. And what we know from, you know, a lot of the research that's out there, and if we want something to be long lasting, it needs to come from inside. And, you know, it needs to be an intrinsic motivator. And we want our children to be intrinsically motivated. And so putting all these external, you know, forces or ideas from, you know, coming from the outside for them really makes it difficult for them to develop that internal motivation to want to do things. And, you know, the fear and the punishment and all of those things that, and the shame that comes with some of it is just, it's a really hard thing, you know, to bounce back from sometimes.
Well, and I think, and to lead into what you would also were indicating too, is the fact that sometimes children change the behavior because maybe an adult made a statement or threatened or whatever, and that, you know, the experience usually is very short-lived, just like praise. It's pretty much short-lived in terms of its expectation. But I remember once a child saying to me, he was doing something, climbing in the cabinet or something of that sort, and I simply ignored and wasn't paying attention. And he turned to me and said, "Why aren't you watching me do something bad?" And again, the indication is that it's only bad if I'm watching you, essentially. And so therefore, I'm going to be able to do it and don't have to pay attention. So it kind of backfires in terms of what some people believe that changes children's behavior.
Right, and you know, like you said, we're indirectly teaching them that there are different rules at different times, instead of having the understanding that, you know, this is an all the time type of thing. And who gets to decide what's naughty?
Yes.
You know,
yes,
that's the other part of that is, you know, I think of a lot of different things that behavior wise that drive some adults nuts that are really, you know, normal types of behaviors. So where's that line crossed in terms of what's naughty and what's not?
Yeah. And is it naughty all the time? I mean, are there times when it could change from naughty to good or whatever, good to naughty in terms of, but yeah, so it's a real fine line in terms of that. You know, the other thing I hear people say often too in the stores, and that is, I'm watching you, as if that statement is supposed to make me be better in terms of my, you know, I've got my eyes on you, I'm really watching you, so you better behave in terms of that. So does that mean that if I'm not watching you and my eyes aren't on you, that I can do whatever it is I want to do? It just doesn't make sense because the message is so unclear in terms of its practice with children.
Right. And they're, you know, and children, I think a lot of times we don't give children enough credit because they get it. They, you know, children understand when expectations are different. They may not always follow the different expectations, but, you know, they're pretty good at reading when, or knowing when some things are okay and when some things are not okay, at a very young age. And so giving them this inconsistency is almost like giving them permission to do things that we might not want them to do when somebody's not watching.
Right. I remember reading in Alfie Kohn's book, Punished by Rewards. He said that often praise or threats or rewards in general kind of manipulates children's behavior, so it actually gets them to work in terms of a very short-term component, but really, because they're looking for adult approval, but if we use it often, then children begin to practice using it, because they think that they have to seek adult approval. And it was kind of like what you were referring to just earlier, is that I'm doing it because I want your approval, or Santa's approval, or God's approval, or whoever, in terms of that component. But it's not because it's the thing that would be best for me inside, but because somebody else is expecting it. And I think that's part of the worry I have with all of these components that are related to threats, rewards, and punishments, don't you think?
Definitely. And, you know, like I said, sometimes we don't give young children enough credit that they get it. And I think the hard part about, you know, dangling the cookie, or, you know, looking for the rewards, or having the punishments for it, is if you want to sustain that behavior, the amount of the reward has to get bigger and bigger, or the punishment has to get bigger and bigger in order to maintain that over time. And that's, you know, that gets to be a real scary type of thing.
Yeah, can you imagine starting out giving M&Ms and then eventually have to, you know, buy the whole Hershey chocolate factory and say, you know, this is yours, just change your behavior. Because I think you're right, it's kind of that, it only works if we increase it, is the belief in terms of praise. So if you're just constantly giving the same reward, then the behavior doesn't continually change. So the volume and the amount and the type all has to increase. And it really doesn't have a long-lasting effect, because I worry that we really want children to do things, to behave in a certain way that's appropriate for them, because that's what they feel inside, rather than pleasing someone else in terms of that. Because I think what's happened is we've raised... it's often referred to as being raised as, you know, praise junkies. We just have a lot of individuals who start out as children and end up being adults, who tend to do things just because of the reward, the recognition, et cetera, that they receive, rather than because it's the best thing to do for children. Do you worry about that too?
I do. And, you know, I see it sometimes with young children too, because they're always, you know, not... Young children are egocentric, but then there are the children who are, you know, making sure to bring it to your attention what they've done. And when they don't get the praise for it, they melt down because they're looking for that continual praise. And, you know, and it's a real struggle to get them to, you know, start doing that self-reflection, because their whole value of themselves is based upon what other people are saying, because they forget that they have a say about themselves, if that makes any, you know, if that's making sense at all. Is that, you know, they're looking for all of this stuff from everybody else, but without everybody else there, they're not quite sure what to do with themselves.
Right. I remember Carolyn, she was about 3 and a half, and she would just come up sobbing. And I said, "What's wrong, Carolyn?" And she said, "So-and-so didn't like my picture." And I thought to myself right then, it's to the point where she depends, even at 3 and a half, has learned or thought that she needed to depend on what somebody else's view of her painting was to receive acceptance or acknowledge the fact that she could paint even. So it took quite a while to get her to the point where she stopped crying, but also to begin to take a look at what she liked about what she painted. And even while we were talking, she would still say, "But yes, but Sarah doesn't like this." So I had to bring her back each time to the whole component of what was important to her. So once that's established, it's really difficult to change in terms of that process.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's such a struggle, you know, as a caretaker, as someone who cares about young children and even cares about other adults, to watch that, and to try, you know, and as you said, you had to continually keep going back and back. So, you know, it's to me, the more information that we can share with other people in regards to not getting to that point, to, you know, to give, to not get children in the, so used to getting praise from the outside that they're not looking at what's important to them as individuals is so important, because, you know, there are a lot of praise junkies out there. And the more that we can get young, you know, starting at a very young age, children to really look at themselves and get things coming from the inside versus the outside, the better off I think we're going to be overall.
Oh, definitely. And I remember saying things like, you know, what part of this do you like? Doing some description about, did you start at the top? Did you start at the bottom? Which makes more sense than start internalizing it rather than talking about what Julie liked about your picture. We really need to spend a lot of time helping her focus on that. So even when we're talking about things like, am I doing this because Santa's watching, or am I doing this because this is just what's important for me? It's a good evaluation for myself. And again, like you had indicated, that self-reflection is much more crucial for a child's sense of self than it is for someone else's experience or opportunity or evaluation on that component. So part of it is helping adults begin. Because I'll be real honest, I had to practice that, because during the 50s and 60s and early 70s, I remember saying good job a lot. I'm embarrassed to say that, but I remember saying, because at that point, we thought that saying good job would actually build a sense of self. But now we realize that in most cases, it's more of a manipulation tactic to make the person who's saying it feel better in some cases, and that we're moving towards, helping adults move towards getting children to be more self-reflective.
Well, have been for so long to say good job or, you know, those types of things. And so it's a real struggle for me, you know, even now sometimes, because, you know, you practice and you do things, but it's real easy to fall back on on old habits. Sometimes you're 100% on top of it. And of course, the more you stray away from that and work on other things that you could say, the less it comes out. But I'm sure good job comes out of my mouth a couple times a week at least still. And it's just something that, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, I'm sure there are things that we all have that we're continually working on. But it's like, oh my gosh, did I, you know, and as soon as it comes out, it's like, oh, I could have said something different. I should, you know, and I'm trying to get rid of the word should too, because the word should implies shame a lot of the time. So switching, you know, switching that in my mind too, I could have said something different in terms, to, you know, just for my own practice and things as well. But it's a really difficult thing to work with. And like you said, you know, practicing it and running through scenarios in your mind. And, you know, I do a lot of role play sometimes when I'm struggling with different situations and ways to respond with some of with my husband who works with me, or with some of our assistants and things. That's one way that we try to work with, okay, how's the best way for us to respond to this and kind of bounce things back and forth. Because the more you say different things and the more you practice them, the easier it is and the more natural and the more it will come out the way you want it to when you're working with a young child.
Well, sure, just a good job was natural for us. And in some cases, you're right, it's very difficult to get rid of something that was real natural. But again, as we practice things and do more self-reflection and helping children develop that sense of self-reflection, that becomes, again, a pattern that's practiced and changes in terms of what we see and do. And that's just part of professional growth. Thanks so much. It's that time at the end, and thanks so much for letting us shake some bones. If you have questions or want continued discussion, email me at dkj5075@aol.com and Amy at...
You can email me at amyahola@hotmail.com, or you can find me on Facebook at Child Central Station.
Thanks so much for listening.
Bye-bye.
This has been Shaking Bones. Dan and Amy will be back next week for more Bone Rattlin'.
Stay tuned. Hey, you want to support all the Upstairs Studio podcasts? It's as simple as this. Use our Amazon link when you shop Amazon. We get a small percentage of what you spend. You don't pay any extra. You get your stuff from Amazon. Everybody wins. Where do you find the link? Well, it's on the Explorations Early Learning app. You can find it on the Explorations Early Learning website. And if you don't find it in those places, just get a hold of Jeff on Facebook or via email, and he'll hand deliver it to your inbox. Thanks for your support. Bye-bye.